I think. 3 hours in which we will deal into all such things as reincarnation, the extraterrestrial, extraterrestrial intelligence, direct communication from sources greater than your own. And we'll deal with it from a very, very unusual source. As I was looking over the subject matter to be covered by our guest, who is not yet with us, he had a lecture appointment tonight, so he'll be a few minutes late. It was it looked like a voyage into the realm of open mind, and I knew that I had to have this man on the show, and I'll introduce him to you when he does arrive. We will be talking about the Kabbalah, Jewish mysticism, and there is a lot in there that I didn't know was there. And there's a lot about the Kabbalah that very few people know. And we have one of the world's greatest or leading foremost authorities on the Kabbalah with us, Dr. Philip Berg. And while we're waiting for Dr. Berg to get here, however, I certainly will entertain any questions that you may have about any of the open mind material that may be on your mind until he does arrive. Let me give the telephone numbers in Los Angeles, 520-TALK. All numbers end in TALK, T-A-L-K. San Fernando Valley, your number is 990. In Orange County, 750. In Burbank, Glendale, and Pasadena, 244. In the San Gabriel Valley, we're 448. Down in the South Bay area, your number is 679. In Long Beach, San Pedro, Paramount, Compton, Lakewood, that area, your number is 639. So we have an open forum until Dr. Berg gets here about any and everything. I do want to take this moment to tell you how gratified I am that so many of you have written to me and expressing an interest in going with us to London. The London trip for the Open Mind listeners via the KABC Travel Club will take place in the last week of October. I believe it's the 23rd that we will board an airplane and go to London. And we will be there for a week. And what a time that we're going to have in London. They have worked out a marvelous schedule for us. We'll be staying, I believe it is, at the Waldorf Hotel. We will go, of course, to see London. We'll see Buckingham Palace. We'll see those places. We will visit a number of places that are well known for having spiritual manifestations there, or ghosts, if you want to call them, the haunted houses. We will go up one day, spend the day at Stonehenge and see Stonehenge, going over to Bath and see that. We will end up our week in England on the Royal Vessel Barracuda. That will be steaming up and down the Thames River, right under the Tower of London and London Bridge, and we will be having a Halloween night of it with a kind of a dress-up Halloween party and dinner cocktail party there on the River Thames on Halloween night, and then it'll be back. It'll take a week, and through the auspices of the KABC Travel Club, I think you'll find it extremely reasonable. We have three lectures along the way, one of them by Lord Clancarney of the House of Lords. He will fill us in on the House of Lords' own investigation into the phenomena of the unidentified flying object. And Lord Kilcowney certainly understands and knows that they are a reality. And he'll be glad to share all of that with you. We'll have lectures from one of the leading experts in England on this matter of what you might want to call ghosts. But those things have been seen, and they've been proven, and they've been photographed. And some of the people are just hanging around some of these places. We're even going to have banquets in some two or three of the great banquet halls of the castles that are in and around near London. And, of course, all of those castles have their own ghosts that occupy them, and maybe we'll get a chance to see those. So I'm looking forward to taking as many of you with me who can possibly go. It's a great way to see London, the last week of October. And if you're interested, just write me a letter here, Bill Jenkins, KABC Radio, 3321 South La Cienega Boulevard, Los Angeles, 90016, and just write London Trip on it. And I will scoot all of those cards and letters to Chucky Travel, who is the head of the Travel Club, Travel Consultants of America out in Burbank, and they'll get back to you with all of the information. Dr. Patrick Flanagan is going to go with us, so I know that you'll probably be wanting to talk to Patrick and Gail, and, oh, a lot of surprises. And the more that goes, the better we are. Okay, let's go to our phone while we're waiting for Dr. Berg to get here. We're talking to Hugh. Hugh, welcome aboard.
Hi, Bill. Mm-hmm. I must admit that I'm a little glad that your guest didn't show up on time this evening, because it gives me a chance to bring up something from last week's show and something that was in the news this week.
Okay.
Did you see the Associated Press release and the CBS coverage of the noises in San Francisco Bay that are being heard in Sausalito?
I've heard about the noises. They're also being heard in the Puget Sound.
In Puget Sound, which is exactly 2 degrees longitude from a straight line up from San Francisco Bay.
Those seem to be summertime nocturnal noises, and they've been returning faithfully for the last 11 years.
Right, and the Navy is totally at a loss as to what they might be, and they're heard at exactly the same time in Puget Sound and San Francisco Bay. Interesting, huh?
Well, it leads you to believe that it's not something that's drumming away in San Francisco Bay.
Right.
That certainly it would seem that some energy is being pumped into that area for reasons unknown. Why it's picking just the summertime to do it is hard to say.
And we get a lot of attention focused on that noise, and it seems to be a little worse right now than it ever has been. And suddenly we've got these horrendous rainstorms and thunderstorms in the Cheyenne area.
Strange, isn't it?
Weird. Thank you, Bill.
All right. Thank you, Hugh, for bringing that to attention. That was very perceptive of you. We're certainly... I know some of the people that were involved in a lot of the research and data that we used in last week's show are looking at the sounds at Sausalito and Puget Bay to see if it's a Puget Sound to see if there is any kind of connection, if they're connected with the woodpecker signals of all, any of those things. So we'll try to find out.
Okay.
All right. All right. Thank you very much, Hugh. Now we have Jerry. Jerry, welcome aboard.
Hi, Bill.
Mm-hmm.
I really loved the show last week, and I was really glad that you had it. And there was something that you talked about on the show last week that reminded me about the propulsion system in the Enterprise,
mm-hmm.
The Starship. One thing that, if I remember right, they used a warping system there. They warped space, and that was the thing that propelled the Enterprise through space. And I'm wondering if anyone has thought of, like, I wonder if the Russians are using this for, like, a propulsion device.
I have no idea what the Russians are using anything for, except usually it's to no good,
mm-hmm.
as far as, you know, from our perspective or our vantage point.
Mm-hmm.
The propulsion device of that marvelous spaceship Enterprise, you understand, is a product of Gene Roddenberry's science fiction
mm-hmm.
mind, which
mm-hmm.
is a very, very good one, by the way, and deep-reaching, and certainly was aware of some science that was around that said we may be doing something like that in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Scalar interferometry as a form of propulsion system, it certainly has all of the attributes necessary to the science, although it's relatively new, to be the propulsion system of the future, and even has the capability of allowing you to move into space without having to go through escape velocity and things
like
that.
Yeah, it seems like it would be the ideal way of avoiding the problems of trying to stay with or being limited by the speed of light, because if you warp state, it seemed like you would be able to control, you know, the time dilation effect that way, and that way you would never... You probably would have the effect of never really moving anywhere. The space itself may move.
You warp space-time, or bend
space-time, right.
As it said.
Yeah.
And I think we are seeing some laboratory work where this is being done now. It's no longer the figment of the physicist imagination. It does happen.
Uh-huh.
And it happens on a very local basis, as well as one way out there in space in the far distance from it. It's a local phenomenon as well as a distant one, which certainly changes the view that you have to take of physics these days.
Uh-huh. It seems like it would be the ideal, you know, propulsion system, because if you can get energy from space itself, then, you know, you wouldn't necessarily be limited by the amount of power that you would need.
And the whole world, all of the universe, it seems, of course, not having been to all of the universe, but we could just say it seems, it floats in a sea of energy, and you might as well use it.
Yeah, I really love the show, and all I can say is thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Jerry, for your interest and for calling in.
Okay. Goodbye.
I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Saturday night. It's Open Mind. We have an open forum going with you right now until our guest, Dr. Philip Berg, gets here, which will be a fascinating evening as we look into the mystical world of the Jewish Kabbalah. But that's Open Mind country if I ever saw it, from what I've been able to read so far of his works. I'll be right back. We're talking about the open mind, in fact, as I get into it. Our guest finally arrived. Welcome to Open Mind, Dr. Philip Berg. You are with our people. I mean, I start reading books like The Kabbalah Connection, and we're talking about reincarnation. We're talking about extraterrestrial intelligence. We're talking about a lot of things that are sort of germane and basic to what we do here on the open. I didn't know that we were Jewish. What is the Kabbalah?
Well, first, let me just extend a thank you, Bill, for being on your program. I've heard a great deal of the efforts that you and so many throughout the world are trying to present a new redirection, excuse me, in our thinking, opening up our minds, as I'd like to refer to as. The Kabbalah is, I think you've kind of stated it far better than I can, and that is to create a greater awareness of not only the cosmos, not only of extraterrestrial intelligence, but what I'm afraid of is that we have very little knowledge of our own selves. We're kind of closed. And the Kabbalah, in its presentation, a redirecting our way of perception of things around us, I think will permit us to see something far and above the five senses, what we call the metaphysical.
Mm-hmm.
It's right here. It's right around us. Unfortunately, we don't see it.
Now, the Kabbalah, it has been around for a long, long time, hasn't it?
It's been around since the first astrologer, from a Kabbalistic point of view, and that was Abraham the Patriarch some 3,800 years ago.
Has it played an important role or part in the development of, say, the Jewish religion and the Jewish nation? Or is it something that is aside, more or less like an oral history, rather than the actual written word and the laws and the commandments upon which ritual and ceremony and rote seem to be built?
Well, shall I say, unfortunately, you kind of put it correctly. Most religions have encouraged its congregants or people involved in whatever religion they might be to conduct most of their ritual as rote. From a Kabbalistic point of view, that is the furthest from the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Religion as such, in my own humble opinion, has failed to some extent. We're always looking for peace on earth and goodwill towards men. And somehow the stress on morality and precepts, commandments, just doesn't seem to kind of do the job. We're still in the same old conflict since Abel and Cain.
Have we really made much progress since Abel and Cain is the question, I guess, that arises, and where I figure that progress would be made, and that is the true evolvement of the soul or the spirit. And we've tried many things. Certainly in man's history, the Jewish religion has been very, very important. Certainly on... from the descendants of Adam and on down, that part of the world. And then came the Christian religion beyond that, and there is a connection between the two. But we still see that man's inhumanity to man simply hasn't changed too much since the very earliest days. Where are we going wrong?
Well, you've already established that we must be doing something wrong. So, from a Kabbalistic point of view, we're just not observing the Old Testament, which is the origin of all religions. And I think we're kind of looking into the Bible as a document to be understood on a very superficial level. And from a Kabbalistic point of view, the Bible is nothing more than a cosmic code. And the Kabbalah is its deciphering.
Mm-hmm. Who wrote the Kabbalah?
The Kabbalah, the first book on Kabbalah, was written by Abraham the Patriarch, and which is a very abstruse document. However, it's the implications concerning astrological influence is so enormous and profound, and yet this document has been hidden and concealed for whatever reasons for some 3,800 years. And as head of dean of the Research Center of Kabbalah, this is our primary thrust, to bring to all peoples of the world an awareness of what's really going on out there, rather than the preconceived notions that have brought us nowhere.
Well, you say that the Kabbalah has been hidden for all of these years. Was it stuck away in a cave and found by a young shepherd boy? Or has it been around but was maintained a sort of a mystic secret air to it because the time wasn't right for this new information, which is really old information, to get into the general wellspring of life? Or was it being held down because of political forces within a religious group, which have been known to have those?
Well, I guess we prefer to remain non-political, and nevertheless, I think the statement you made concerning the time wasn't right is probably more closer to the truth. And in fact, the author of the Zohar, which is the principal text for the understanding of Kabbalah, makes it very clear to us that peoples of all religions in the age of Aquarius are going to receive this knowledge, the knowledge that will ultimately bring the feeling of love thy neighbor.
The real feeling of it.
That's right.
When did the... Is it Kabbalah? Is that the way you pronounce it?
That's correct.
I've been mispronouncing. From Texas. What am I supposed to say? Kabbalah? When did this start surfacing then among the people? And has it been a surfacing just among the Jewish community, or has it been worldwide?
Well, one of the basic principles of Kabbalah is the teaching of the three-column system, the triad. The Star of David represents two triads, one on an upper level and extraterrestrial and celestial, and the lower triad is the terrestrial level. And I don't know where the Trinity came from, but if there's anything that is close to the triad, you've got it right there too. So it's been around a long, long time. However, the time wasn't right.
Its influence then, say in the last 5,000 years, 4,000 years, has not been that great then in, for instance, the religious thinking within the Jewish community, certainly within the Christian community.
It's been true for both religions.
Mm-hmm.
While there is an acknowledgement of its existence and its validity and credibility, I guess we just weren't ready.
Just weren't ready for it. But you can pretty well establish that part of its authorship belonged to Abraham? Or who are some of the other writers of the Kabbalah? Kabbalah.
Well, you might be a Texan, but I'm going to have to tell you, Bill, but in the prior incarnation, you were just what you said you were. Okay. We then... some 2,000 years ago, when the world met its first upheaval, a chaotic upheaval, disorder in the universe, both on a celestial and terrestrial level, and that was during the time of the destruction of the Holy Temple, which provided nourishment for all peoples of the world. An individual whose name was Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai and his son, hidden in the cave 13 years, so as to negate the corporeal influence of what we call the desire to receive for oneself alone, so as to achieve an elevation where they would come to the realization that there is only one thing that this world is going to have to learn, and learn real quick, and that is the art of sharing. Sharing for the sake of sharing, rather than for the sake of receiving. And there the basic text for Kabbalah came into existence, revealed by Moses himself and Elijah the prophet, our first two space astronauts. For those of you familiar with the Old Testament, it's very clear that space vehicles were known at that time. And so if we're getting any messages from out there, well, thank you, Elijah, but I hope you're coming a little loud and strong than you are at the present time.
Turn it up a little bit. Yes, the Bible, as we read it now, we've gone into that on many occasions here on this program, is quite replete with descriptions of extraterrestrials and their craft, particularly the Old Testament, particularly Genesis. It's quite a wonder whenever you start getting down into the etymology of those words. And I see that in the writings that you have done in these marvelous books of yours, the Kabbalah Connection, the Wheels of the Soul, and then you explain the Kabbalah for the layman, there is a connection in what you're teaching in these books and what we have learned from a lot of other different sources, which I find quite fascinating.
It's all coming together today.
Mm-hmm.
The interest, the fact that you have, and I've been told, a very popular program, there is a change. A great number of people.
I think so, and the change is there. The 5 years, 10 years ago, the show wouldn't have happened. In fact, 5, 6 years ago when we started, we thought we had two chances, slim and none. But it has done very well because of the material. But it is very encouraging for me to sit here and see a rabbi or a clergy of any kind talk to me about astral projection, the astral body, reincarnation, extraterrestrial life and intelligence, and have that rooted in a religious belief. I find it fascinating, and I think you will tonight. On Open Mind, my guest is Dr. Philip S. Berg, and we'll be back in just a moment. The Kabbalah with Dr. Philip S. Berg, who is one of the world's foremost authorities on this ancient bit of teaching, which sounds so very, very modern. We talk about Atlantis, in fact, in there. Was there an Atlantis, Dr. Berg?
Well, if I was there or not, I kind of will pass that question. But from the description of the Zohar, the basic text of Kabbalah, seems to indicate that there is a nation living underwater presently. That was witnessed by several of the students of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Now, that's what it says. These people who are the people of Atlantis are those, that civilization, that most advanced civilization of the Tower of Babel. When we read in Genesis, they were going to build this 7,000-story structure. And we still haven't, I think, achieved anything more than maybe 110 stories. And without getting into the details of why these people were dispersed, but nevertheless, they wound up underwater. And how did these students even reach them? You know, we think that it's only fish that can live underwater, but nevertheless, there is a civilization and there is an art on how people can live underwater. So that's where Atlantis is presently.
In the Atlantic?
In the Atlantic.
The Bermuda Triangle, is that a part of it?
I kind of believe it is. There is no... I can't say for sure just where it is in the Atlantic, and since the Bermuda Triangle seems to have this this unnatural or paranormal phenomena, I would kind of, myself, connect Atlantis with the Bermuda Triangle.
So why would a civilization be existing underwater like that on a planet such as this? They like it better there?
No, but if we get into the energy intelligence of water, and that's one of the things we're trying to establish, that when we relate to water or relate to any inanimate object from a Kabbalistic point of view, the atom and all structure, all molecular structure, has an energy intelligence, a desire of one kind or another. Now, water has a desire, an energy, intelligence of sharing. That's why it seeks its own level. Mm-hmm. It goes against gravity. And inasmuch as these people were involved with a negative activity of the desire to receive for oneself alone, that's really what the Tower of Babel was all about. Greed, corruption, for oneself alone. They were immersed within the energy intelligence of water, which is the desire to share. And so convert these people from their desire to receive for oneself alone to an activity of sharing, which is principally the teachings of the Kabbalah for all mankind. That's got to come one day or another.
Mm-hmm.
And so we find these people within the water underneath.
Sharing the underwater life.
That's right. Getting accustomed to share.
And doing some strange things to some of the people who live above the water and get in their area from time to time. You speak very strongly about the reality of reincarnation in your books as a part of the Kabbalic teaching. How did that that great feeling of the men of philosophy who certainly were given information that was far beyond their conscious ability to have it, who wrote those great books of the Bible that we accept and this, how did reincarnation get out of the mainstream of thinking, both in the Jewish and in the Christian way of life? Wasn't always that way, I don't think.
Oh, by all means. But if I might, Bill, if I can have my wife Karen feel that question, she loves that one. And
all right, Karen, get right on. Let me turn you on over there.
Hi. First of all, I don't believe that it is out of the mainstream. I think it perhaps is out of the main field of knowledge for most people. And therefore, as in any religious practice, they don't want to accept or acknowledge something that might cause a little ripple, okay,
in their way of thinking. As far as to see reincarnation as an existing principle, 600,000 people left Egypt and went into the desert. And there was war between themselves. And there was many, many different things. People died and were born again. However, the end result was that 600,000 people entered the land of Israel. 24,000 people were killed during an episode in the Bible. 2,000 years at the time of the destruction of the temple, 24,000 people were destroyed in a plague, very much like the plague that killed them in the Bible. And what I'm saying is that reincarnation as a process is a process to all of us. And the reason that a lot of the religious sects refuse to accept it as an existing truth is simply because they can't explain it.
I sometimes feel that one of the reasons I don't want to accept it is because that then gives you a reason to look at something with greater authority than the authority of the structured religious organization.
I think religion has a problem that they're going to have to face up to, and that is the Decalogue. We read in the third commandment where God will visit the sins of the forefathers upon the children and grandchildren. And every thinking individual is going to ask one basic question. Why am I responsible for the sins of my fathers or forefathers? And many have considered that to be an unfair doctrine within the Decalogue, the Ten Commandments. And so this great sage, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, who obviously wasn't inclined to restrict some of the comments he made, and said that that would be unfair, and we could not understand the Ten Commandments as including that kind of a doctrine. And therefore he goes on to interpret that we are not discussing the sins of the forefathers. We are considering our own sins. In other words, in a prior incarnation, that was what I did wrong. And when someone is born maimed, blind, He's paying not for the sins of his forefathers or a prior generation. He is paying for his own sins when he himself, in a prior incarnation, committed those offenses, and the law of cause and effect applies both on a metaphysical and a physical level. And there we have the total doctrine of reincarnation. And how this misinformation or corruption ever came about is really even beyond me.
It certainly has come about. There are some fascinating success stories to be told of people who have all kinds of physical ailments, who once they find out about their previous lives, which can be done, and find out what it was that they did.